If you thought we hit on a hot button topic last week with talking about money, you don't know the half of it. Tonight, we want to look at a topic that has our entire country divided, just about down the middle. About half of the people in the country feel one way about it, and about half the people in the country believe the other way about it. And it's also one of those topics that preachers are told they can't preach about. But I believe I can preach about anything the Bible tells me that I can preach about. So we're going to study it this evening. So before we get into it too deeply, I want us to notice at the bottom, if you picked up your page, that has the verse on one side and then it has the information that we usually, sometimes we have two pages front, or, you know, front and back and then the verse. But if you look at all these X's down here at the bottom, I want you to do something for me. Well, not really for me, for yourself. You see they're in rows, a little break between the rows. If you look at that first column, there are several rows in that column. If you look at the first row in the first column, there are 10 X's in that row, in that first little row. And then there's a space, and then there's 10 more, and space, and 10 more, and so on. If you look at that first little group of 10, you want to circle that group of 10. Just go ahead and get a pencil or a pen and just circle that group of 10. And then go to the next group over to the right. There's 10 more X's there. And you can circle that little group too. And then we'll circle a couple more of those along the way. But I want you to circle those two right now. Scripture actually comes from Proverbs chapter 24, verses 11 and 12. But I want us to glance, before we get into that, at 2 John in verse number 11. Verses 9 through 11. You've probably heard this passage a few times. It says, "Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. If there come any unto you, and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. For he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds." Now we talk about that often. We say, well, you know, if somebody is teaching false doctrine, and we cannot associate ourselves with that person because we become a partaker of that evil deed that he's doing in teaching that false doctrine. But you know, most of the time, we don't apply that kind of thinking to moral areas of life. And I know he says doctrine, he's talking about a teaching. But most of the time, our morals are based on the doctrines that we hold to be true. And so if someone is living inconsistent with the doctrines that we hold to be true, then there's a moral problem there that we need to be aware of. When you read about Peter and his being swayed away into hypocrisy, and Paul says, "I confronted him to his face, because he was to be blamed." He says, "When I saw that he walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel." But many times we see people that aren't walking uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, and we join hands with them and continue to go on as though everything is all right. And nowhere is that more true than the area where morality meets with politics. They say that preachers aren't supposed to preach about politics. So you know what they do? They take moral issues, things that the Bible has taught about, things that the Bible has been clear about, And they try to say it's a political issue. And that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about abortion. They tried to make this a political issue, tried to make it a court issue, tried to make it a vote on in Congress issue. But abortion is a moral issue. It's not a political issue. And no political governing body can take away our right to teach what the Bible teaches in regards to whether it be abortion or homosexuality or adultery or any other sin, any other moral issue. The Bible is clear about it. We don't have to back down. I don't care if they say it's politics. Oh, it's a political issue. We can't talk about politics. We're not talking about politics. We're talking about Christianity. So if you look at this, we're going to see that the Bible does say some things to indicate where we should stand when it comes to the moral issue of abortion. Proverbs 24, verses 11 and 12. If you forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death, and those that are ready to be slain, if you say, behold, we knew it not, doth not he that pondereth the heart consider it, and he that keepeth the soul, keepeth thy soul, doth he not know it? And shall he not render to every man according to his works? You know, a lot of times as Christians, we acknowledge, yes, abortion's wrong. But beyond that acknowledgement, we turn a blind eye to what's going on in our country. We ignore it. We try to pretend it's just not happening. And I think probably most of us are ill-informed about what actually is happening. I have a video put out by the same group that put out the Searching for Truth video. It's called Abortion, A Woman's Right. And the speaker on that video is the preacher at the Timothy's and Woods in Huntsville. He's the speaker on that video. There are two sections on that video, about an hour long, I've got about 30 minutes on each one. If you'd like to borrow it, I'd be glad to let you watch it. Because it shows things that I can't tell you with my words. It shows images and pictures of what truly goes on with abortion and what's really happening. And I think it's important for us to recognize that. Because sometimes we don't realize what's really happening in this country. The date January 22nd, 1973 may not mean a whole lot to a whole lot of people. I was 4 months old that day. I was 4 months after my birthday to the day. But that was the day that Roe vs. Wade was passed. The courts ruled on it and that it became the law of the land. And what happened in that court case was that the court determined that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees the rights of a person, including that they are not property, is based on the Dred Scott decision that was to try to refute slavery. That was the point of it. But it also gave people the right to live and to be free. But that court determined that the word person in the 14th Amendment does not apply to an unborn child. A child doesn't have the right to live. A child doesn't have the right to be free. Even though our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created. What's that word, created? You read that, a political document that says created? Yeah, they believe in creation. They believe in evolution. All men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That means rights that cannot be taken away. And that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So there's some other indefinites too. Some of these residents probably haven't, but they don't let them read it anymore. But those three rights, life, liberty, the freedom, and the pursuit of happiness, not necessarily the attainment of happiness, but the right to try to find what makes you happy. Those three things, he says, that in the Declaration of Independence, he says those things are inalienable of the rights given to us by our power of Creator. He doesn't have exactly what the Bible teaches us. That God created us in His own image. He gave us life. He took dirt from the ground and breathed into it after He had fashioned it. Breathed life into that man when he became a living soul. And yet, our current situation is that it's perfectly legal for any woman and many girls to choose to kill the child that they're carrying. Up to and including its birthday. That child's birthday, they can choose that day to have to be its birthday. There are no limits. From the federal level, certainly. Some states have tried to put limits on it. And those who have full abortion will fight tooth and nail to try to defeat federal limitations that could legislate the legislation saying that if the child is a minor, she must consult her parents. And that's what this is. Notification and parental permission to have the abortion. Well, that's not a good thing. Don't even want the parent to know that they're not. In fact, in some states, a 15-year-old girl can be taken during the school hours to have the abortion. Without her parents even being notified that it was done. And more than those same states, she can't even get an action from the school nurse without a written note from the parents. She was in the picture. It's madness. It's crazy. And yet, that's the society that we live in. At the same time, that if the first that is going to come, we also have on the other side, remember Scott Peterson? Lacey Peterson? You heard of Lacey and Connor's law? That's the unborn victims of violence law. But there is an unborn child, but the mother is killed, the unborn child is killed, that person is killed by two, and besides the other child's murder. And they get mine. Is it a child or is it not a child? Because if that person can be cross-trained to talk to mother, then every abortion doctor in this, it doesn't even make sense to call them doctors. Every abortionist in this country should be behind bars serving a lifetime in prison. Because this person will kill more than one. And they can take the name doctor too. The Hippocratic Oath says, first, do no harm. And in fact, if you read the entire oath, this is privacy with the father of physicians, even specifies that we would not ever help a woman in the ending of her pregnancy other than through a bank. He said that. And doctors. His generation took the oath. But they could first do no harm. And that's no harm can you do. to rip the child from the place where it is living in place.
That's
not how this is. I would never do it. 3 and verse 5. Jesus is dealing with the Jewish people. And as he looks upon the people, he becomes angry. He becomes very frustrated with them. Look what he says in verse 4. He said unto them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day, or to do evil? To save life, or to kill? That's a pretty easy question, isn't it? Is it lawful to do good or to do evil? Pretty good. Is it lawful to save life or to kill? They didn't answer him, since they had the peace. And this father says, and then he had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved to the hardness of their hearts. These people were so hardened in their hearts that they were going to see this man who was crippled, who had a bigger hand. They could have seen him continue to have that life and to do this to be a man. You think Jesus would be angry with us today for our hardness of heart in the United States? For we would rather not have had him have this chance as to whether another person, another individual, another human being with a distinct and separate DNA. He gets to decide whether that person lives or dies based on what? Based on whether she wants him to or not. Based on whether she wants to have a child or not. They call it reproductive choice. The choice and reproduction must come before the pregnancy. As you are not reproduce, there are two ways to work on that. One is obstinate. That's the only surefire way. I've heard a couple thousand years ago, even that kind of way. But I don't think that's going to happen again. The only other way is through contraception. But sure, you changed your mind or decided you didn't want to think of the choice. And it is a choice, but it's not a choice that you can make and be right with God. And we need to work to inform our young ladies how important these decisions are. Because if the abortionists won't talk about it, the shame and the regret and the guilt and the emotional and physical sorrows. You know, many women who have gone through abortions, then later when they want to have children, they find themselves unable to conceive. They can't, and they want to, because they make a choice. Do we condemn the women who God glory to this? No. We help them. We encourage them. We teach them about the grace of God and the forgiveness that's available to them as it is to any sinner. And we help them to understand the difference between right and wrong. We must understand that life begins at conception. In Luke chapter 1, Matthew chapter 1, and verse number 18. One of the biggest arguments that constantly is going on is, well, it's a fetus. It's not a child. It's not a human being yet. It's just a mass of tissue, or it's just a growth. They talk about it like the child with cancer. Now, certainly, it is living off of the mother, Some people might even say it's a parasite. You need to get it out of there. But it is the natural way that human beings reproduce. Chapter 1 of Matthew and verse number 18, it says, now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother, Mary, was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Now, this was before he was born. Before the birth, she was found with child. While they were still espoused. Before they came together, she was found to be with child. Here is a young woman, who's unmarried. She's pregnant, and her current boyfriend is not the father of the child. She's from a very poor area, and she herself is most likely very poor. And she's certainly living in a society where a child born without a father is looked down upon far more than is today. Now this is the ideal case for someone to have an abortion, isn't it? What does she have? Can you imagine what the world would have lost if she had chosen an abortion? And unfortunately, Mary understood the sanctity of life. She understood that the child that was within her was special because it was a child created in the image of God. Maybe more so and more special even than the rest of us. But all of us are special. Every child that's born is special because that child is created in the image of God. In Luke 1 and verse 41, when Mary goes to see her cousin Elizabeth, and Elizabeth also is pregnant. It's in the bumper sticker. If it's not a baby, you're not pregnant. I like that one. You know, if it's not a baby, then maybe you have a cancerous tumor and you should go to the doctor about that. But if it's a baby, you're pregnant. If it's not a baby, you're not pregnant. In Luke 1 and verse 41, speaking of this, it says that when they were speaking there, and when the babe leaped in her womb. Now this was a child that had not yet been born. And the Greek word that's used there is grephos. Later, in chapter 2 and verse 12, when the angel is speaking to the shepherds and telling them how to find the baby Jesus, he says that you'll find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes lying in a manger. Use the same word, grephos. God chose to use, and remember, Luke was a doctor. He knew a little bit about this. And yet the same word is used for the child before it was born, and after, a babe, grephos. Same term. Same thing. The only difference in a child in the womb and a child out of the womb is the development and the size of that child. That's the only difference. One of the things on that video is a series of images taken inside the womb of these tiny, tiny little babies. So tiny. And yet already it shows that at 7 weeks already you can see their little fingers and their little hands. You can see their little eyes and their little ears starting to grow. You can already tell that's a baby. You can tell. Psalm 139, verses 13 and following. The psalmist tells us as well that God created us and that we were human beings even in the womb. Verse 13 says, "For thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb." That's what he says there. He recognizes that he was already who he is, even when he was still in his mother's womb. Don't we talk like that? Don't we say, "Well, before I was born," but we still talk about I. "Well, my mom did this when she was pregnant with me." See, we already acknowledge that we're the same person that was in that womb. We understand that. And even the abortionists understand that. They may lie and prevaricate and try to twist definitions and change it to make it not right, but they understand that that is a baby in that womb. And the scientific development that we've had now to be able to have cameras inside the womb that can take pictures of these little infants. The fact that we now have DNA, they can test and they can see that the DNA, even when it's just, when that's just covered with a clump of cells, and it doesn't look like a baby yet, they can still test that DNA and know that's a human being. Because the DNA proves it. The DNA in each cell is already written at conception. As soon as the egg and the sperm come together, you have a new human being. Different from the mother and the father, and yet similar to both. Different. Whole new set of DNA. Notice what he goes on to say, "I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not made, was not hid from thee when I was made in secret." It's not much of a secret anymore. We have cameras where we can see what that baby developing and stuff in there. But back then, you know, it was a secret. You didn't know what was going on inside there. You could see, yeah, you could see she's getting bigger. You could see she's a good child. But you couldn't see what was going on inside. It was a secret. But God made him in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. "Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect." You know, a little baby's still developing in the womb. It's not perfect yet. But it's in there. And you can see the parts. "And in thy book, all my members were written, which in continuous were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them." He said, "You already had it planned out what I was going to look like before I looked like that." Notice he said, "In thy book, all my members, all my parts were written." Well, I don't know what book that is. The book of life. The book of life, not the book of life that tells who's going to make it to heaven, but the book of life that's encoded in our DNA. It was certainly written in that book, wasn't it? As each of us is. But he explains that God fashioned him, and he knew about it even before he was finished. Jeremiah also talks about it. He talks about how God had planned for him even before he was born. God already had plans for him. And God talks about, "I knew you even before you were in your mother's womb. I knew you. I had plans for you." We need to understand that our worth comes from God because we are created in the image of God. God has given the right to life, and no one can take that away. But what do? We go out and start blowing up abortion clinics like some do? No. One death doesn't atone for another. And certainly vigilantism is not what God would have us to do. So what can we do then? and write nasty letters to them? Imagine that'd do much good either. But there are several things we can do. First and foremost, of course, we can pray. We know how powerful prayer is. James 5:16 tells us. 1 Timothy 2:12, 2:1 and 2 as well tells us that we should pray for those in authority, that they will make wise decisions when it comes to these things, that they will submit themselves to the will of God when they've got to make these decisions, and quit following after these false things that are being told. But then, of course, we also need to understand that as part of the system in the United States of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, we're part of the government. We need to vote based on God's will, not based on who's going to give me the biggest check, or based on who's going to give me the best tax rate, or based on any other social factors. We need to vote based on what God wants. And we need to ask ourselves, hey, here's these two or three candidates running for office. We need to find out, what do they believe? Where do they stand? And when we find that out, then we need to ask ourselves, which one would Jesus vote for? We need to vote for morality.